And what do you hope this conversation leaves behind for people listening to this particular podcast?
That they embrace who they are and they know not only to take care of themselves first, but curiosity and connection and being and like working with people is where the magic all lies.
Welcome, Third Rock listeners, to the Branding Laboratory. I'm your host, Devo, Chief Experience Officer for the Brand Storyteller and the Fusion Creative Brands. And each week, I have the privilege of speaking with extraordinary leaders and entrepreneurs who are reshaping the way industries work. These conversations go way beyond the surface to explore the core philosophies, the lessons, and the challenges that define the brands that we admire today. And one of the greatest rewards of this podcast is the opportunity to share the insights of some of the brightest minds in business, people who are passionate about pushing boundaries and redefining what's possible. And as I always say, the stories we tell are the brands we build. And this show is a testament to the power of that concept. Let's dive in. Every now and then, somebody walks into your world with a kind of quiet intensity. They're not loud, they're not flashy, but their presence really makes you lean in and listen and pay attention. And today's guest, Emily Schneider, is one of those people. She calls herself a visual storyteller. Hey, that's kind of like my name. But she's not just in the business of slide decks and telling stories. She's in the business of clarity and maybe even more, some courage, dare I say. There's something deeply vulnerable about trying to communicate your message clearly in a noisy world. It's what I've made my entire living on the last few years, is teaching people how to do that. But more so, especially as a woman, and I don't mean that as a slight, but women have a more difficult capacity or difficult job of sharing their message, I think, in a marketplace saturated with men. And I believe that, and it is what it is. But as an entrepreneur and as a creative in a business landscape, sometimes getting that message across with clarity, succinctly, and being able to share that message deeply and emotionally and connect with people is a more difficult opposition for many, including myself. So today I'm not really here to talk about presentations, which is what she does. And we're going to learn a little bit about that and how she helps individuals share their message using PowerPoints and slide decks. But I'm here to talk more about presence, the kind that you cultivate over time, the kind that you build through seasons of doubt and small wins and reinvention and quiet persistence and getting through to the other side. And that's really the journey that I'm interested in. What this podcast is all about is hearing from leaders, from CEOs, from entrepreneurs, from people who are in the trenches building a business, and the lessons they've learned and the failures they've had and how they've reversed that karma and that juju and created something that matters and something that has a legacy to it. And I want to invite you to listen in today, not just for what Emily does, but for how she sees the world and what her philosophies are and what it means to her to show up. And maybe that might unlock something in you. And that's the whole point, again, of this laboratory podcast, is to hear something in another leader's voice perspective that you might be able to use for your own life, for your own business. And that's why I do this show. So listen in, take notes if you need to. And this is the Brand Storyteller Podcast, and I'm Devo, and this is the kind of conversations that I live for. Welcome to the show. Good to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So again, as we talked a little bit before, this is just a conversation, and I just want to learn a little bit about who you are. My listeners are mostly entrepreneurs. And the whole idea of this show, and it's sort of evolved. This is like the 112th iteration I think I've tweaked. The more I kind of dive into it, the more I realize the conversations that I live for are the ones that have like a raw authenticity to them, and not afraid to pull back the covers on the leaders, yourself, and how do you live and how do you view the world? What are your philosophies? What are your biggest lessons? You know, what really just gets you going in the morning, unless it's Friday, and just kind of share your candid insights with my listeners. And so it's not really about what you do as a business, and I do want to know that, but it's really like, how do you think, how do you operate, how do you view the world, and what can I take from this conversation, or anyone listening that's like, holy fuck, that's a nice gem that I can put into my life today. Does that make
sure
sense?
Totally, I
So
love curiosity. It's how I thrive.
yeah, so I guess before we get into it, just so we have some context, who are you? What do you do? And what is it you're trying to ultimately accomplish with where you are right now in your life?
I love it. I'm Emily Schneider. I refer to myself as the PowerPoint queen, but really I'm a visual storyteller specializing in PowerPoint with a magical knack for simplifying complex information. My brain just has a way of breaking things down to make them simpler so that I can understand them. And I realize that my creative curiosity and my emotional and empathetic heart combined with that design or ability to create things is a talent and a skill set that a lot of people need, and I can help articulate and allow humans to connect better. It's all about emotional connection, especially in this world and this crazy, chaotic, right, attention-seeking economy. The ability to tell your story, especially in a business sense, so that your audience is engaged, they listen, they understand, and they follow along, can make such a world of difference for you as the speaker, as the leader, and for the decision makers that you're trying to inform.
I like that curiosity, emotional output, storytelling. And you talk about storytelling visually, and you just talked about it in your little mantra there. Thank you. Well stated, by the way. But what do you wish more people understood, I guess, about how we present ourselves to the world, whether it's on screen or off? And how can the words curiosity, emotional storytelling, all those things that you just threw out that sound really great, how can we sort of incorporate those and make sense of them in our own journey, in our own day-to-day sort of aspects of what we're doing?
The first thing that comes to me, it's all about confidence, right? When you're confident in what you're sharing, when you're confident in your story and you believe in it and you trust it and you know it's good, the way you speak with people, the way you connect with people, which again, I think is a universal truth that we all want connection, it just resonates and it becomes this spark that illuminates that power. And so when you show up more confidently and prepared and ready to tell that, you are able to connect better and tell that story. And then there's this amazing neuroscience and data about how we process information, how we remember things, right? Data are just facts. When you connect it with a story and you add visuals, we're 65% more likely to retain information than just text alone, right? The way we process images is different than the way we process words. And so when you combine a confident thought leader speaking or connection or conversation with visuals that help you articulate what you're saying and kind of create, I like to use the term conversation conductor, like an orchestra has a conductor who creates this harmonious experience. That's what you're creating. And it's as simple as it starts with, like, we were just talking about my young kids. Like, my daughter can't read, but she loves books because there's an emotional connection to pictures that help her see a story. And so when you have somebody who's there to bridge all those gaps together and create this harmonious experience, it really is a powerful tool.
So what I hear you saying is it's less another brick in the wall and more shine on you, crazy diamond. Your shirt.
Oh, yeah, sure. Totally. Right. It is. It's about showing up better with the right story, and those visuals lead to everybody being on the same page, right? We could talk about what the weather's like. We could talk about a tree outside. I can say I have five trees outside. You have no idea what kind of trees I'm talking about. But when I start to tell you what they are, or when I show you pictures and I set that visual scene, we're all on the same page. And it makes a lot of sense, especially when you're talking about investments and moving businesses and product development. You got to show people what you're talking about as you're speaking to it.
All right, so the question begs, because I saw PowerPoint and I haven't used PowerPoint since I worked at the corporate world back when I was a slave to the system. People still use PowerPoint?
Oh yeah, it's not going
Who?
anywhere. Everybody,
Who?
everybody. It's the most universal tool. I mean, I think that Microsoft has like 60 some thousand million, I don't know the data, I'm making that up, but they have a crazy number. It's the most used universal tool
Okay.
because it has functions to create and be exchanged and be collaborative and allow you to lock in things that make it easier to become turnkey too.
All right, I'm not going to argue with you. I just didn't know that. So thank you for
Yeah.
sharing that insight with me. I'm a Canva dude now, so I really love Canva. So I don't know, is there a difference between using Canva for a slide deck versus PowerPoint?
Yes, Canva's amazing. And Canva helps with design, and especially for people who aren't really comfortable in PowerPoint as a tool. PowerPoint has a lot more blank starting spots. Canva has visuals. And again, going back to this whole visual storytelling, when you start with something, it's easier to build on. But I also think you should never start online. But Canva doesn't let you from a, and again, they're evolving. So I haven't explored all of their templates, but you can't lock in masters. You can't set styling in terms of headline and treatment. You can't copy things. But really, it's about setting up your grid and locking background and layers. It doesn't have the same capabilities. The other thing that Canva is getting better at, but they're not as advanced, is the data and information and like graphic design ability, and the amount of control you have with PowerPoint and Excel is data. Canva is coming along, but they're just not there yet.
You should put together a proposal and reach out to the CEO of Canva, who is a woman, by the way, and tell her you would like to help her start up and make that process more robust for them as a separate sort of add-on for their services, where people would pay a little bit extra to have whatever genius you're going to bring to the table through their
I love it.
presentations.
Like they like, yeah, like a customer, like they, I'm like their on-hand
Let's just
designer.
say you
Yeah.
heard it here, Emily. Let's just remember
I
where you
love
heard
it.
that.
I love it.
Was there a moment in your life? I always sort of look at my life, and since it's my show, I'm just joking. I look at my life, and I was like, "There's all these like pivotal moments that have occurred." And I used to, I'm only reflecting on this now, to be honest with you. When the last few years, I never saw those moments as moments when they occurred, and I wasn't really self-aware around them. And now I see them happen all the time. Like I'm consciously looking at, "Hey, there's a window of opportunity right now. Should I kind of entertain this a little bit more?" But I never did that before, right? And it's
Yep.
weird. I don't know if it's just because I'm older and I'm wiser, more experiential. Maybe it's all of the above. But when you look at your life now, was there a moment looking back in your life that forced you to sort of reframe how you view yourself and your role in the world and sort of how you got to what you're doing now?
Yes, but can I also say that like I feel like I've been seen and heard when you ask that question because but I think that the reason why now you can look back, I believe I look back, is because I'm okay to be more vulnerable. And I'm okay to say what happened, what's going on, do I know this? Versus when I was younger, I was that wasn't like a comfortable space. And so I wanted to show up being perfect or like knowing everything and be really good at what I did, versus now I'm more open to that experiential. And so I see the opportunities differently than having to show up and know the things, if that makes sense. I think it comes with weight, age, and wisdom. Yes, I feel like I could say three pivotal points in my career that made me do
Well,
that. Or
I'm sorry to interrupt. Not just career. I'm looking for your life. So, I must preface, I think everybody feels like when they're on a professional podcast, they need to keep it professional in the sense of their realm of their Monday through Friday day job. But I'm more interested in Emily as the human. And so, were there moments that occurred to you, whether they're personal or professional, that have really been were pivotal for you in a sense of, this is going to force me to reframe how I view myself or how I show up in the world. In my case, it was when I got divorced. It was like, for me, I had never really had any failures in my life, and in a sense of like just bad things happened to me other than my childhood. If you've ever watched any of my shows, I had a horrible childhood with my father, but I never had any like tragic moments. I was very successful. I'm very talented. I've always had a lot of success in what I've did. And then I got divorced and I was like, wait, this doesn't add up. Like, what did I do wrong? Because I've done everything right, and suddenly I'm not doing everything right. And I realized I wasn't doing anything right. I was doing everything wrong, but I thought I was doing it right. And so it was like this was a pivotal moment in my train track that was like, you can go left, you can go right, you can go down, you can go up. Which one are you going to do? So back to you. When you look at it from that perspective, where there's some moments that you now reflect on, like, holy shit, that literally has kind of brought me to where I am today.
yeah, totally. And I guess I shouldn't say career. It's just my life, right? My sweet 16, the first thing I ever actually tangibly designed, I remember vividly the room, the paper with the dots that you had to line up to put into the printer that then you ripped apart. I remember showing it to my parents, and I remember their smile and the way I felt that I created something, and that appreciation and the power of how my confidence grew and their appreciation of it.
Why was that so epiphanal? Is that a word? Why was that so impactful for you?
Because I made something that, again, words that I can have as an older adult, I made something that made somebody feel something that I then actually also felt the emotion. And that, as somebody who is such an emotional, heartfelt, forward thinker, it changed the way I wanted to appease people. It changed the way I wanted to help people. And then everybody showed up and I think they had a good time. And so I noticed how good I felt when I helped somebody else smile big. And it changed the way I showed up in the world and it changed the way I talked to people.
That was your Sweet 16 celebration. You got to put paper in a printer. Wow.
And
Okay.
design it, right? It was very questionable. Questionable fonts, terrible, colors, like all the good things
Fair
that come.
enough. All right. What else? You said there were three.
Well, I guess so. There, I'm going to add a new one in, so I have four. But we can talk about three. In college, I went to University of Kansas, and I knew I wanted to be in graphics at that point, right? I was like 10 years later, or not 10 years later, whatever it is, 8 years later. And I got in, and in order to get into the graphics program, your first year of college, you have to take like these design 101 and drawing 101, and then at the end of the year, they do this portfolio review, and they decide if you're in the program or not.
Oh, wow.
And not everybody gets in it. And I loved art, but I was never the best in my class. I didn't, I like could do things and I had a good creative mind, but my art growing up was always dance as my expression, not like fine art. But there was something about the computer graphics that I knew there was, I knew it was really fun there. I liked like, anyway. I was also not the best in my grad class. And I remember we had a lineup and there was a group of four girls that like we were kind of close with that year. And I didn't have to have a portfolio to get into the art school. I had to get through this core, this phase in order to get through to the program. And I totally remember that day. Obviously it was like all anxiety ridden. Like you take your whole year of work and you show it. Like you have to put it on display and the teachers review it for hours and then you line up. And one by one, you go in, and these four professors tell you if you got in the program or not based on that work. And I was so nervous. I kept going to the back of the line and kept going to the back of the line because I was like, I don't have the grades. I would show up and I would, I my the way my feedback would get in classroom, the way the reviews would be, the way I worked so hard. And my professor, Andy Witzak, looked at me and she's like, you by far, not, she didn't say it this way, but she basically said, you are definitely not like you don't have, you're not at the skill set that you need to be, but your work ethic, I have no doubt that you will make it through this and you're going to be a great designer. And that changed my belief in myself again about being perfect, showing up, giving it my all. And here I am now. I made it through the program.
I'm always fascinated by work ethic over talent, talent over work ethic.
Yeah.
If you had two things, all things being equal, and you had somebody who had greater work ethic or someone who had greater talent, who are you going to pick for your team?
Work ethic, you can teach talent. You can, ex if they're open to working hard, being curious, being a collaborator, listening, growing, training, they'll figure it out.
I tend to agree with you. I'm coaching my daughter's high school lacrosse team right now. Not that I know anything about lacrosse. But I'm a student of the game, so I spend a lot of time figuring it all out. And I'm happy to say we're about to have in the history of their lacrosse, of all their high school sports teams, the first time we are potentially going to go 500 for the season and finish 8-8. So I'm really excited about that. But I always sort of look
Congrats.
at coaching in the same way of, to answer that question. Do you take someone who's really talented or do you take someone who's really works hard and less talented? And can you create that? And there is that fine line. I don't disagree with what you said, but there is something to say about people who have God-given talent. Now, how can you take that God-given talent and turn that into someone who has work ethic? And I think you can, but I do tend to agree with you. I would rather put people in positions on a team, whether it's in my business or on my sports coaching, that are willing to put in the effort and the work and be coachable. That's what I tell my athletes.
Yeah.
Be coachable, man. Like, you don't have it figured out. Look, no matter how good you are, you don't have it figured out. So, anyhow, sorry, a little
But
sidebar
I
there.
think that's where, like, if you have the talent, it comes to like there, it's not just talent or work ethic. It's your personality too, right? Like, if you have talent, but you're open and curious to being able to learn, that's different. But usually those work ethic people are more open and curious, and the talent people have an ego and they're always right, or they know what they're doing and they don't work hard
Yeah.
because it comes naturally, and that reflects differently.
Yeah. How can we all be like Michael Jordan? I just finished watching the Netflix series on Michael Jordan. Have
Exactly,
you seen
right?
that? Have you seen that show?
I've seen part of it. I'm an narcoleptic, so
You
I've
have to go
passed out
through
in
it.
my free
It's
time.
phenomenal. Like, and I knew this about Jordan because I grew up watching Jordan. I've always been a Jordan fan. But the work ethic that this dude has apparently is like unlike anything on the planet. So I always tell everyone, like, be like Michael Jordan, be like Mike.
Yep.
Every entrepreneur, and it includes just every human in general. I shouldn't say every human because I know some people who still haven't woken their asses up. But everybody sort of has this moment where they had to let go of what they thought they were, what they were supposed to be, or what somebody told them they were supposed to be. And in my case, I've let go of a bunch of shit. Was there like, when you look at your life, what is there one thing that you had to release to sort of step into this version of Emily that we now see today?
Yeah,
What?
it was the art of being perfect at everything and releasing that and bracing and embracing the curiosity and the wonder that comes with not knowing. Again, going back to the pivotal moments, 2023, I had a long-term contract with a client. I had been 3 years into my freelance business, and I started freelancing because I was 8.5 months pregnant and laid off as another pivotal moment in my career. But that 2023, January 3rd, 4th, whatever it was, I showed up ready to work for the year. And my sweet director was like, budgets have been slashed. We have to cancel all contracts. And boom. And it put it my whole year. That was like the worst year I've had as a freelancer. But it was the best year I had as a personal growth because I got curious and I started and I was like, it was the first time I started telling people what I did, that I was available for work. I had this ego before that I don't want people to know as a freelancer that I have availability. Like, what the F? Like, I'm a freelancer. I need work constantly coming in the door. I'm a contractor. Like, nobody knows unless you tell them, I realized. And as I started having these, I call them curious conversations, reaching out to people, what's inspiring you? What's driving you? Because I was lost and I didn't know what to do. My ego was trying to like control me. I realized what I loved doing and where my joy came from. And I ran into this term because I was reading a book called Zone of Genius. And it's about doing work or doing something that brings you joy, that lights you up, but that you're really darn good at and you're confident in it and you're proud of it. And I was like, it was one of those books where you read it and you're like, did they write this for me? But that chapter changed the trajectory of, I think, my life because it allowed me to say, I can be curious. I don't have to be perfect. But if I'm good at something and I'm willing to help people and work with people, it's a win-win for everybody.
I was looking at my phone. Sorry, I was listening to you. And the reason I was looking is I was trying to find you on social media to sort of see if you are talking the talk and walking the walk. And you are. So, for those of
Thank
you who
you.
are just listening to the show, and this sounds like a radio broadcast, but I always like to just plug, this is Emily Schneider we're talking to, and she's a visual storyteller specializing in PowerPoint presentations for leaders, right? So, I'm not giving you the, I'm going to let you have the 30-second mic on that. What do you do specifically now? What problem do you solve, and who do you specifically solve this problem for?
Yes. So I help take presentations to the next level. I help create more connection, trust, authenticity, and create more confidence for leaders to tell their story, to move their businesses forward, to create opportunities and drive conversations that they need to have that are based on clarity and information, right? And the data and the facts of their business. I work with a lot of C-suite and leaders and just founders and entrepreneurs who have and know that they have a story to tell, who usually are articulate enough because they've been through the journey that they understand the importance of being a good presenter, but they know and they'll raise their hand and say either presentations are not my skill set or I don't have the time and this isn't where I should be investing my time and energy, and I can save that and it's worth the financial investment for me to give it to somebody who can do it, and the ability for me to connect and then elevate that really helps them and their business and let them focus on what's important.
So what I heard is you help C-suite specifically executives who are challenged or who are challenged or marked for giving some sort of presentation, whether that's to board of directors or workshops or whatever it is that they're doing, internal, external, et cetera, and you help them craft a message for these specific decks that they're going to be presenting to an audience. That's kind of, did I encapsulate that?
Yeah,
Okay, sorry.
I actually just did some work on this week, and I could like re I, as you were saying that, I was like, actually, I just wrote this like very epiphany that I use emotional intelligence to create narrative experiences through presentation design. Emotional intelligence to create narrative experiences in presentation design for businesses.
Does that new little thing that you just rattled off, does that include who you work for, who you work and who does?
No, I have not gotten that far
Got to get that down.
in this one. Yeah, I mean, I got this one too, right? Let's talk about my phone. Like, I got it on my phone. It's my screensaver, right? I believe in the magic of a well-crafted presentation to create momentum, drive business success, and unlock game-changing opportunities. I help business leaders turn their ideas into concise, impactful presentations that build confidence, save time, and make a lasting impression.
I want to hear that when I read it, and I just want to know exactly, are you talking to me? So would do you when you ask yourself
Yes.
that question, when I read that, am I talking to me?
To me. Is that the
If
question?
you were me, a C-suite executive, and you were reading that on LinkedIn or social media, wherever you read that, would you be able to answer the question, is this talking to me?
I hope so, because I hope I find that when I reach out to people, they and I explain what I do, I help business leaders have more confidence, tell their stories better, and design presentations to make a visual impact. They are like, tell me more, let's connect. So I think so.
Okay. Well, cool.
But
I wasn't saying it wasn't. I was just asking if that's
I
what.
also appreciate the challenge, because I think, to your point, like, this new emotional intelligence to create, experience or narrative experiences, like, yeah, that doesn't answer the who I'm reaching out to. It's a work in progress.
The who, the
It's a
what, the why, and what makes it unique, and specifically, why would I want to work with you? What problem are you going to solve for me? And I heard this really great maxim many, many years ago. And I'm sure you've heard it many times. And I tried to tell this yesterday to somebody, and they're like, "You're calling me stupid." I was like, "Maybe I should be calling you stupid." But KISS,
Yeah, keep
keep it
it.
simple, stupid. I like to understand how people think. What are their beliefs? I tell all of my clients, if you don't understand your values, then you're just basically walking in a blind fog. Like you have no direction where you're going. So when you look back at your trajectory. And so you used to work in the corporate world. Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Exactly. Yep, I worked in marketing.
Are there any specific beliefs that you were raised by your parents that you've had to unlearn now as a business owner, as a mom, as a CEO of your own life?
I would say I am unlearning the idea that I need to put everybody else before me, and that those boundaries to say no are actually super protective and make me a better person in all of my roles and in all of my positions. And I'm also unlearning the idea. So then it's always not the idea that I'm always right, but like unlearning, I'm learning how to be a better listener than just a talker.
I think this whole idea of putting other people before us, it sounds good in theory. And I do love the whole idea of like your business should be a serve first philosophy. But as it pertains to you yourself, you can't forget about who you are in the journey. And if you're underserving you, if you're not taking care of your health, if you're not giving yourself time to relax, if you're not doing things to nourish you and keep you curious, to borrow your word. Like, what good are you to the rest of the world if you're like fucking yourself up, right? So, and people are always like, "Well, that's just so narcissistic." And I was like, "No, it's not, man." And I'm actually running through this journey right now. This is an interesting conversation. I have a client right now who is we're really collaborating well together. We're really gaining some momentum right now, and there's conversation about him. He wants to hire me in like a full-time capacity to basically help him run his business. And I was like, and for a nice chunk of money, but I have to remind myself, I'm here to build my business, and I'm here to do my things, and I'm here to make my impact and run my podcast and still have time to, play with my children and play with my wife and travel and all the things. And so I have to ask myself, is that filling me up? Like, or am I just chasing this, this golden chalice of more money, which in theory sounds great. It'll give me greater opportunities, but at what cost to myself, to my sanity? And so I think we've come up with sort of a game plan that's going to work, but you're right. That's a really good point. And I don't think a lot of people figure out how to do that until it's really late in the game and a lot of toxicity is built up. And it's like, shit, I got to unlearn all that stuff and start over again to an extent. So if you were counseling me or anyone else in that space now, because you're going to ultimately talk to yourself when you're helping other people, right? It's like, shit, I'm just really talking to myself over here when I'm helping other people. What would you say to yourself if you were in a conversation and you were like, self, like you're not taking care of you. Like, let's talk about this for a minute. So, how would you counsel yourself in that space?
for me, it's reminding myself of boundaries. I crossed my fingers when you were talking because another thing I'm unlearning is the idea that like less sleep, more productive, more things is better. And actually, I'm learning the magic of sleep actually is that empowerment to do the things, to show up, to have more clarity, to say, hey, I don't do meetings on Fridays, but I'm happy to meet with you Monday morning and not feel bad about it. Or I can't, I used to say yes to every project and sacrifice all my sleep. And I have learned that is not, and then my work wasn't good because I'm exhausted or, right. And I'm not perfect, to be honest, like March and April, like I didn't take a much break because there's a home project going on that I'm trying to fund and make sure that it's covered. And so, but I like recently this week was like, I need a break. Like I need a pause. So it's an evolution. It's about giving yourself some kindness and some grace, but I think it's being clear on like what you need. And for me, it's creating like productivity schedules. It's being mindful of like when I'm productive, what I enjoy doing. Why would I do work that I don't love? Especially that's like where I'm like what I learned in the marketing world and working for somebody versus myself. I'm like, I don't mind working weekends or nights because I make the schedule because I'm gone from 12 to 2 some days running errands or going on a walk with a friend and whatever. And if I own it, I can't get mad at myself and I can't hold this bitterness. And now I believe creative work, you have to be joyful, you have to be happy, and you have to be healthy, or else your work's going to suffer. And I can see the shift from when I worked for somebody else to where I work for myself and that ability to create the space and the environment. I mean, that's what being an entrepreneur is all about, and building your own thing is doing what works for you. And just if I'm up at midnight now by choice, it doesn't mean I have to send the email because I don't want anybody to write me back. So it's delayed. It's like schedule send. It's using tools and saying, I need, I don't know that answer. Let me find out versus like, I should know it. It's those kind of graceful things to help me show up better.
I love that. I'm working on a magazine article right now for a magazine. I'm just saying that a couple of times so you can show how cool I am writing a magazine article. I'm sure I am, but it's sort of like there's more than one way to be addicted, and it's centered around, it's not just drugs and alcohol, or like there's lots of ways to be addicted, and work is actually an addiction for some people because it gives them this sense of validation, this sense of fulfillment. I'm making a difference. And it's like working harder means I'm working better and all these sorts of things. And I was like, I don't really feel like I used to feel that way, but I don't feel that way anymore. So appreciate what you said. I posted something this morning on LinkedIn, which I just followed you, by the way.
Yay.
Before you do anything, launch, post, pitch, or plan, ask yourself, does this solve a real problem? Is this genuinely enjoyable for me or for others? Does this curate or add real value? Does this entertain or emotionally engage? Does this teach or clarify something useful? Does this inspire action, change, or perspective? And if it checks even one of those boxes with intention, do it. If it checks more than one, you're onto something meaningful. Do you agree with all that?
Yeah, I think the intention is the biggest part, right? Are you intentional and are you thoughtful with your choices? And it gets easier over time, right? As you build it, as you figure it out, as you create that ability to say me first or me too, it helps.
Well, serving yourself is literally claiming your birthright as a creator, in my opinion. But I didn't come up with that. I came up with from this dude named Neville Goddard. Have you heard of that guy before?
No.
You need to read some Neville. He's an old school philosopher, but he had this whole piece around serving yourself as like the number one priority. It's like you cannot give what you do not possess, for example. So if you want to serve others with meaningful and intent and in purpose, you have to first recognize and embody that your own power also needs that, because you're just basically a vapid, soulless entity if you're just throwing everything away, right? So you should check out some Neville. I really I think he would resonate with you. Wow, lots of cool things. So, I guess have you always been in a leadership position?
No.
But I don't mean like CEO. When you look back at your life.
Oh yeah, I guess so. I was like cheer captain all the years. I was always like the guru bringing everybody together. Yeah,
So you've
I like
always
being
sort
in
of been in,
control.
yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I find that to be like I find that to be one of the most marquee common elements in most CEOs, entrepreneurs, is that most of their life they were sort of whittling their way through and finding leadership positions, as you just said, cheer coach, whatever it is, captain of the football team, all those sorts of things. But I don't know that leadership itself is something that's really taught as children. We're not really taught like how to become better leaders. And I don't mean leaders of a company all the time. Like, leaders is like, for me, it's a metaphor for holistic perspectives and how you show up in life, making the right decisions, being morally, have a moral compass, being able to serve yourself, being able to like create something that helps other people, whatever. Like, leadership comes in many shapes, sizes, and colors, right? So I did this little exercise a few months ago. I was writing another article, and it centered around this whole idea of leadership and how do we show up as leaders. And so I interviewed, and I'm asking you because I took all of the CEOs that I had interviewed on podcasts over the last 4 or 5 years, and I sent them out this mass query, and I was like, "Here's what I'm doing. I would love to hear your take, and if I like what you say, I'm going to incorporate it into my article." And I did. I picked five people, and you can see it on LinkedIn. What's your view of leadership? What is leadership to you?
So, when you say that like leadership isn't taught, it just baseball season just started for my 9-year-old. And there are so many conversations that we have that I hear the coaches have, that I hear other parents screaming on the sidelines. And it's about showing up for the team. It's about cheering them on. It's about being on the field with your presence, even though you may feel defeated or you had a bad at bat, but cheering them on. It's even just what's the pitch count? Where does the ball go next? I think those are leadership qualities that are slowly coming, but it's interesting because, again, as the new season is starting and these guys are figuring it out, I hear it and I hear it being a conversation that they're having with these young kids. And I think it's starting to evolve. I was not in a group like team sports. I was in more, I mean, I guess danced, but it was a different kind of team sport, right? It was all choreographed. So very interesting that you say that. Okay. So the question is, what is my leadership style?
No, what's your view of leadership? If you had to define leadership, what is it?
Oh, I think leadership is about empowering people to do their best work and supporting them and being and showing them. It's a modelship method. It's, I believe, as a mom, I'm a leader, right? For my crew, for my team, I call them Team Schneider. And I always say to my husband, I have to show them. I have to do the work and the way and the behavior, and I have to act and I have to speak because you learn by example. And I think that's what leadership is really important about. It's not about just saying, it's about doing.
I like your take on it. You'll be tickled to know that of, I think there were 55 people that responded back, and all of them had various takes on it with their own subtleties and nuances. But at the core, I believe every single one of them was this whole idea of serving other people first and empowering other people first and being sort of a beacon, a light, a guide, that sort of stuff. And I don't know that I always viewed leadership as that way. It's sort of been a becoming, if you will. And you used that word earlier in one of your statements. You said, becoming, I'm still becoming. What part of your life, your business, your marriage, your parenting, which by the way, are all sort of constructs of who you are, right? What parts of those are still in the process of becoming?
All of them.
All of
I haven't
them.
arrived.
It never
I'll
stops,
never
does it?
arrive. No. And then when you get there and you're like, this is amazing. I love celebrating wins. It's what's next? What do I want more? I actually had a conversation with somebody at the end of last year. And I said, what do you do when you keep hitting your goals? Because I keep hitting goals. And it's the same idea, right? Okay, I did this. I got here. Like I set this future thing and I got here. Now what? But it never stops. And that's what I love because you can get somewhere and you get to this plateau and you have this whole new perspective and you have to challenge yourself differently. I actually have these conversations weekly with my health coach because I've been on this journey for 5 years and where I'm challenged or what I see today is very different than when I first hit my goals 5 years ago. But my perspective is different, my mindset is different. And so I show up different and I keep having to elevate, even though sometimes I'm like, why does it seem shouldn't I already be here? And it's like, no, you're never going to be there because now that I know this, it's like once you know, you can't unknow and you have, I just, and that's like part of, I think, my leadership style or just my innate ability to my curiosities. I just want to keep going. It doesn't end. And even though I love checklist and task list, even when I check them off, I create the next one because it feels so good to keep.
I love that word becoming, and it's kind of fantastic. I'm in the process right now of really one of the, I don't really call it a goal, but one of the things I'm really trying to uncover is sort of the meaning of life, if you will. Like, and I don't mean that to be like cliche or cool. I'm just like, I'm very curious about this whole idea of who we are and why we exist. And it really, the stuff that I'm going down, which is where like Neville came in and a bunch of other spiritual teachers in my life right now, is this whole idea of becoming, this perpetuity around becoming something. And this whole idea that we're just energy vectors that are just sort of living a life. And in the and in the process of living this life, we are becoming who we are meant to be, whatever that is, and that's different for everyone. And it's this whole idea that our consciousness, like not our physical bodies, but our spirituality, our consciousness, it's ever becoming and it never stops. And like, but the one thing I have to be careful about is that in the process of ever becoming, there is that didaction of acquiring and creating something for the wrong intent. Does that make sense? And so I'm always like, okay, I will take this job and it's going to make a lot more money, but is money the end game for me, or is it having more money so that I have more resources so that I can do bigger things for other people? And I'm not trying to sound like, Mother Teresa here. I'm just saying, like, how do we manage those two buckets of becoming and acquiring?
I think it's like this balance of like, I personally take the approach of like, does it feel right now? Like now. What is the right choice? Because I also, as I'm becoming, am okay to say that doesn't work anymore and I need to pivot. Or I know this, I got here. Actually, that's like, I need to go this direction. This one quote as a recovering perfectionist is if I'm perfect at anything, it's never giving up.
You've talked about this perfection piece a little bit. Let's explore that. Let's lay down on my sofa for a minute, close your eyes.
Yeah, I love
This
it. This is like therapy.
whole idea of perfection and imposter syndrome and showing up, is there a void in your life somewhere when you were younger that you sort of had this identity crisis around how you show up and who you are and what you are and all the things that you kind of have developed this view of what perfectionism or and I believe perfectionism and imposter syndrome, by the way, go hand in hand, and I'll explain that in a minute if you don't agree with me. So back to you though.
I think it totally is from my childhood. And again, it goes back to the idea of like, I always wanted to appease people. I wanted others to be happier. And I wanted to show up as this spirit or as this energy, whether it was creating something, whether it was being the most interesting person in the world, in the room. I used to think that I wanted to stand out. And now I don't need to stand out. I just need to be me. And my curiosity and my heart actually are what differentiate me, not being different for different sake. It's being different because I'm me. But yeah, I was always nervous. I wasn't cool enough. I wasn't popular enough. I didn't hang out with the right people, right? That idea of showing up to serve others first and be there and be in the right spot at the right time. And if I missed the mark, everything was messed up. And again, now it's the idea of like, okay, I did that. Now what? How do I build on it? How do I like, okay, that was wrong. That's a wrong turn. Like sometimes I've taken on projects that are wrong and I've gone to the client and be like, you can have it because this isn't right for me. Right. You can have all my work. I also like create no transparencies. There's no gatekeeping anymore. And that has helped my perfectionism and anxiety. I think those two go together too for me.
Yeah, I love what you said. I truly do believe that perfectionism feeds imposter syndrome because if everything you believe, if you believe that everything you do must be flawless, you're kind of setting yourself up for this to constantly fall short of this impossible, inevitable standard you've created for yourself, right? And when you inevitably fall short, sort of like they just sort of like they add to each other. Because perfectionism, as we know, is like it's imp there's no such thing. Like it's impossible. You have to keep. We just talked a few seconds ago. We're like constantly becoming. It re For me, it reinforces, and I'm just talking from my perspective because I had to deal with this many years ago. It reinforced my belief that I was fraudulent in some way, shape, or form, and I was just faking my competence. Does that make sense how I'm explaining that?
Totally, totally. So two things. So one, I also believe like now I'm starting to say like why what I think is perfect, right? Or like people say like how's work going? How's your day going? I'm like, well, you're asking me, right? So I'm going to give you my point of view. It's great. It's good. Like this is it's all personal. What I think is perfect, nobody else knows. But I used to also
And they might
think
not give a
show
fuck, actually, as well.
right. But to your point, yes, I used to want to be perfect. So I sh example, I showed up at client calls. I didn't want them to have any feedback. I wanted them to love it because I wanted that experience, right? That like, oh my God, she's amazing. She's the hero. I need it. But what did I do? I showed up and I actually, yes, I was an imposter. I felt like, oh shit. Sorry for cussing. Like, what happens if I didn't do it right?
Wait,
Or I
you
got,
said sorry for cursing. I've dropped like four F-bombs. We
oh,
good.
I didn't even notice. Okay.
Okay.
But like, what happened, right? Like, and then I show up and then they challenge me and I can't, I want to be the expert. I can't say I don't know this. And now I'm putting myself in this space to like panic, to freak it up, to freak
Yeah.
out, to figure it out, not freak out, but to figure it out. But what I learned is that if I show up and I say, let's work on this together, you talked about community and not doing it alone. Do you know how much more powerful concepts are? Anything when you open the ability. Again, I said I wanted to be a better listener. When, okay, I have this idea. What do you think? Let's build on it. Or even if they throw out something, you're like, that's kind of whack. It's still going to make your work better. Like it doesn't, they, you know, no ideas. Anyway, so I think there's like this combination of the perfectionism is something I created myself inside. Nobody has any idea what it is. Why did I think I need to show up like that? But also, let's do it together because there's so much more power. Like, we're so much better together.
You know, that's the power of social media. I love social media for that reason. I have a love-hate relationship with social media. I hate it because I have kids, and I hate it because it consumes a lot of time that I find myself, what the fuck? I just sat there for 45 minutes scrolling for no reason whatsoever. But I love the fact that I have things that I want to share with the world, and people actually are listening, go figure, and I get to share something. And hopefully change one person's life. And it's this podcast and it's my social media and on Instagram. And I can't say that a day doesn't go by. Someone drops me a message or leaves a comment or sends me a DM. And it's like, dude, this literally changed my perspective, or this made my day, or this really made me think, or fuck you, I hate your perspective. Like all those come in at one time. But I would have never had the opportunity to do that had I not built a business around sharing my message, confronting my imposter syndrome, dealing with my perfectionism, and realizing that I'm not just another brick in the wall. So you've talked a lot about these sort of things. By the way, my grandfather used to tell me you have 2 ears and one mouth for a reason.
Oh,
And I was like, all right, because
I
I don't
like that.
I know. I don't know if it was his statement or not, but I just really love that. So I just want to share that with you. Sorry, I lost my train of thought. When you're not busy building this business that you're doing, like what you're in the middle of right now, what are you doing to take care of you as an individual on the personal side of things? Like, how are you nurturing and cultivating the Emily Schneider personal brand? Because you probably are. We are the brand. If you're a solopreneur or an entrepreneur with a small business or your small team, like in today's market, you are the brand. So, what are you doing to become the brand? Done. Cause and effect, man. Cause and effect. When you think about, and I know you're busy, so I don't want to take a bunch of your time. That's just my polite way of saying we're almost coming to an end, by the way. I'm just trying.
I don't want to talk to you anymore. We're
No,
done.
no. I love to sort of talk about this whole idea of legacy, and people are always like, the first time I've ever. There was no, sorry, let me back up. Sometimes when I talk about this idea of legacy to people, they're sort of like, that's really vain for you to consider that. And I was like, dude, I'm here for a reason. I don't really know what that reason fully is yet, but I didn't just come to this planet to live this vapid existence and just whittle away into the crowd of nothingness, of the nothingness ether, whatever the hell that is. I'm here to leave something. I want to leave a mark. I want to affect people. I want to touch people's lives. I want to know that at the end of the day, I made your experience with me a little bit fucking better. And that's really what I view life as. So that's my legacy, whether that's in my business, whether that's me coaching my daughter's teams, whether that's as a family man, raising my children, being a better husband, whatever it is. Like, I want to know that in my experience with you, whatever it was, short-lived, long-lived, whatever, even if I pissed you off, maybe that's my legacy. I taught you not to hang out with people like Devo. I want to know that I had some impact on this planet. So when you think about Emily Schneider's legacy, what do you want your daughter, or what would you want your peers, or what would you want your husband to say about Emily Schneider and the legacy she left?
Besides that they felt loved, that they smiled, because I believe when you can spread a smile and that you feel that you that then radiates out, right? When you smile at somebody and they smile back, it changes everything. And so the idea to help other people be more confident, to show up, to feel loved, to feel heard, to feel welcomed, and to be kind to each other is what I want everybody else, what I want people to believe. And I think that idea comes with like being present and then to feel again, feel accepted and feel like I'm there with them and I'm not somewhere else.
I appreciate that. Let's talk a bit more pragmatically, though.
Okay. But that's my legacy. I mean, I want people to feel confident. I want people to be happy. I just want them to do what makes them happy. And if I can help them make their life easier and make them ha and help that ripple start to make them happier and easier and be more focused in their life. That's exactly what I
All right, I accept that. What do you want people to say about you then when you leave the room? You just dropped this podcast for an hour with me. You just gave this marquee presentation using your PowerPoint slides or your new Canva slides that you're going to help create, thanks to
Yeah,
me.
yeah.
What do you want people to say when this presentation is over, when this podcast is done, when you walk out of the room? What do you want people to say about Emily Schneider?
That was so fun. I'm so excited and I'm super inspired to try something and to get curious.
I love that. And what do you hope this conversation leaves behind for people listening to this particular podcast?
That they embrace who they are and they know not only to take care of themselves first, but curiosity and connection and being and like working with people is where the magic all lies.
Well, I really appreciate your time. And for those of you who are still hanging on for the hour and 2 minutes we've been on this show, if this conversation slowed you down just for a minute, good. Happy for that. That was the point of it, right? Because, in my opinion, from my perspective, the world doesn't need more noise. Even though we do have two ears, I do think that it needs more women in particular, and humans in particular, like Emily, who are building something quietly on the side, on full time, whatever it is you're doing, that with intention and with this whole idea of like being fully awake and self-aware around it, and sort of with the eye on the prize of affecting other people. I think that was sort of my takeaway from the show, is that in the karmic loop of this life we're living, everything centers around the cause and effect of what you input is your output. What is your
Yeah.
cause is your effect. And so whether it's building a business or being a father or being a mother or being a husband, whatever other things, there is always a cause and effect to how you show up. And you always have a choice in how you respond, right? So how are you going to respond to that? So anyway, I'm Devo, and this has been the Brand Laboratory with Emily Schneider, my guest, the PowerPoint guru. I really appreciate you all taking the time to join us for this hour. And Emily, any closing thoughts?
Thank you for having me. This was awesome.
Brilliant. All right. We'll see you on the next episode. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon. Thanks for tuning in to the Branding Laboratory. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review. Connect with us on social media for more branding tips and insights. And remember, your story matters. Until next time, keep building and sharing your unique brand story. I'll see you soon.